The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined by Ali Moreno. We kick things off in Spain as the US men were in action, their final game before the start of the World Cup in November. It wasn't very good as it finished Saudi Arabia 0, the US 0. A thoroughly disappointing performance sent from Greg Berhalter's side. This is what Christian Pulisic had to say after the game.
Well, Christian, good to see you back. I'm sure you would have wanted more goals and that result. But, you know, we heard Greg that said that there's a couple of positives. We just spoke to Matt and he said, you know, you finally got to see the feistiness back, the tackling, the attacking prowess. How did you see tonight?
Yeah, I thought we had a pretty good first half. I think we had a couple half chances where we created some things, but I felt like we kind of lost it a bit, you know, starting into the second half, and they got a little bit of rhythm. And yeah, we have to do more to figure out what we're going to do to create chances at the end of the day. But there are definitely some positives to take from the game, and clean sheet is always good. And yeah, I think some things we can improve on.
Mentally, how do you take this then? Because, of course, everyone's kind of tempted to panic sometimes, considering this was the last match before the World Cup.
I'm not panicked at all. You know, we have a fresh slate going into the World Cup, and we're going to give it everything that we have. You know, those first three games in the group stage, and I know that we're gonna do well.
And you, of course, stole all the headlines this week. Everyone is so happy to see your name back on the team sheet now. You, how are you feeling just overall form and mentally there too, getting ready? Because I know there's a lot of pressure on your shoulders.
I don't think there's too much pressure. I feel good. I feel healthy. I'm starting to, you know, get fitness back. Obviously, I'm going to, you know, continue to try to get, you know, as much time on the field as I can, you know, at club level as well, and get myself prepared for this World Cup.
For more on this, let's welcome in, shall we, Sebastian Salazar and Casey Keller. Alexis is much nicer than me, Casey, because I'd have started off by going, that was rubbish, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was not a good performance at all. I mean, there was little pieces, I thought, super early in the game where McKinney was making some runs deep, trying to stretch the Saudi Arabian defense. Now, the good part about that was they didn't have to play through midfield and then lose the ball and then give it back to Saudi Arabia in a dangerous area. But then even though that was having a little bit of success, they stopped doing it. And then, you know, playing out of the back, playing through midfield, then even the ability to isolate some of the Saudi Arabian defenders, take them on one-on-one, it just never materialized. And so I made this point in the last game against Japan. I understand that you have a game plan. I understand that you want to be this short passing, play out of pressure type of team. Well, when it doesn't work, do something else. And what the U.S. has been good at over the years is use their athleticism, use a bit of tenacity and a little bit of a chip on their shoulder and get the ball in behind the opponent's defense and press them and win the ball in dangerous areas and create free kicks. And nope, we're just going to keep going to the same thing, losing the ball and giving chances to the other team. And look, okay, that's fine if somehow you're creating chances, but you're not creating chances, you're looking susceptible at the back. You know, it's I can understand why a lot of people are nervous. Now, it still is a group that you look at on paper and you say, you know, Wales aren't a team that's going to particularly scare you. England aren't in the best of form, but we definitely saw something in that comeback against Germany that shows you that there's something there. And then Iran, who the heck knows what's going to be with that team at that stage. But this U.S. team has to be better. I mean, they have to be better. You keep talking about, we've got players in the Champions League now and this and that. Well, it's time to show it for the national team.
Right, Mr. Angry. Go for it.
Well, you know, Greg Berhalter's getting crushed on social media right now because he said it was a positive step for the group. I think you can only probably say that right in the context of what happened in the first game against Japan. To Casey's point, I do think there were definitely stretches where there was something positive to take from this game. there was long balls with a purpose. They were getting in behind, especially as Christian Pulisic talked about in that first half. But bottom line, the best chance of the game was the half hour mark. It came from Saudi Arabia. I think they were just as good, if not better, the Saudi Arabian team in the second half than the U.S. So that's really disappointing from a collective standpoint. And then I think the biggest disappointment out of today is the individual performances from guys who had big, I mean, big opportunities. Ricardo Pepi getting the start today, and he lays an egg. Aaron Long, a guy who a lot of U.S. fans don't want to see given chance after chance. He got another chance today next to Walker Zimmerman. I don't think it was that great. So these are huge question marks that the U.S. has to answer. And in the last chance to get them answered, guys, those players didn't really check the box for Greg Berhalter.
What was interesting from Berhalter's comments afterwards, Ali, just talking about the team playing within themselves, like this lack of confidence that the players have. But if you can't do it against Saudi Arabia, how are you going to do it on the World Cup stage? Where is this confidence all suddenly going to appear from?
And not even the best version of Saudi Arabia. They had players missing. They had players in this team from Saudi Arabia that play in the second division of Saudi Arabia. Now, look. Full disclosure, I have no idea what the level is in the second division of Saudi Arabia, but I cannot imagine it's all that competitive. And yet, this team, this version of Saudi Arabia, was giving this team troubles. And so this whole idea that the confidence is just gonna regenerate, it's somehow gonna magically appear. Where is a guy like Christian Pulisic gonna get the confidence from? Because as far as we know, he's going to continue to ride the bench at Chelsea. So where exactly is this magical confidence going to come from for a guy like Ricardo Pepi, who got an opportunity today? And while I agree that he did not have an impact, I would also say, and this is not defending Pepi, but it's simply stating fact, it's not like he's getting services. It's not like he's getting put in positions in where he's going to attack and getting behind, and there's a chance then, and somehow he's missing opportunities. The opportunities are not even being created. So there's a multitude of things here with the United States that are concerning. The confidence is a problem. But how do you get confidence if you don't create opportunities? And how do you score goals if you don't create opportunities? So you don't have goals, you don't have opportunities, the confidence, it isn't just going to show up. That's not the way it happens. Lastly, I would suggest this. They're in bad company right now because they're hanging out with teams like Saudi Arabia and Japan. Those are the teams that they just play. Realistically, both Saudi Arabia and Japan will not make it out of their group in the World Cup. They won't. Realistically, that is the situation for both of those teams. And that is the level in which the United States are right now. So this magical improvement that is going to happen in the week of training between the league stopping and the World Cup starting, that somehow this team is going to get exponentially better, it better happen because otherwise it's three and out. It's three and out. And we're projecting into the future. So we don't really know what's it going to be. But based on the evidence that we have seen in the last couple of games, and I agree with Seth, this is only a step forward because you saw Japan and you go, well, yeah, it's a step forward from Japan. But had this game been playing on its own, regardless of a Japan game, just this game, and you just evaluate this game on its own, my goodness, there's nothing to highlight.
Okay, so you think of teams that you played on, you included as well, a personality can come in and kind of shake this team up a little bit. Is this team too nice? Who is in there? Who's telling them to get on with it? As much as Berhalter can set them out. Afterwards, Pepe's saying, yeah, no, we'll look at the tapes and kind of work from there. Tape schmapes. You need to do it on the pitch.
I look at like a Jermaine Jones, for example, that's going to run around and kick somebody and kind of grab somebody by the scruff of the neck. You know, I look at, you know, some of the experienced players that we've had in the past, like a Claudio Reyna, for example, and different things. But yeah, I mean, it's a young team. It's a naive team. It's, you know, when you think that the only player that could potentially have World Cup experience would be a DeAndre Yedlin. You know, it is. It's interesting going into this. So what I would love to see is at least an idea that I am going to be flying out around the pitch. Like, this is an experience that I've always dreamt of. And instead, it almost looks like a lethargy. Like, it's, well, we're so good. We're just going to cruise and not really get out of second gear. And I think that's the side that probably frustrates me more than anything. And the point that, you know, Seb and Ollie were making was that guys had rare opportunities, not just in this game, but in the game against Japan. And what I didn't see was an urgency of, okay, maybe my technique's a little off. Maybe something's not quite clicking for me. But what you are going to see is a guy with his backside on fire who's going to show the manager, show the staff, show the fans that I want this more than anything. In the end, I might not be good enough, but it's not going to be from lack of effort. And I definitely didn't see that urgency in a lot of guys in these two games. And I think that's what scares me more than anything.
How much is that lack of personality a reflection on the coach, Seb?
You know, I don't know that it's fair to put it on Greg Berhalter. I really don't. I think you have a lot of young players who have not proven that they're the guy at the club level. And so they're maybe not comfortable being the guy at the senior national team level. If you want to criticize Greg Berhalter, the one thing you could point to is say, hey, if you need veteran experience, if you need guys to calm the nerves, there are guys in the pool that you're not calling on right now. There's a guy like John Brooks. There's a guy like Tim Ream. Those guys are available to you if you want that veteran experience. And I think it's something Greg Berhalter talked about after the game. I don't want to say it was an excuse he gave, but one of the reasons that he gave for the poor performances, not just against Saudi Arabia, but Japan, were nerves, that these guys were nervous. They know that they're on the bubble. They're fighting for minutes. They're fighting for a starting spot, which to me tells me that, hey, this team may not be emotionally ready for the World Cup. If you're nervous for the last cuts before the World Cup, what happens against Wales on November 21st?
Not emotionally ready for a team like the U.S. where there is no pressure existentially.
Stadiums were empty. You're playing in front of nobody. While you may think that nerves are an issue, look, all of us that lined up as we were going onto the field to play for our national team felt nerves. But that is part of being an international player. With all the pressure, with all eyes looking at you. And that's not quite the case in this country.
No, I was going to say you in Venezuela.
Yeah. It's not the same type of pressure. There is some pressure, not the same type of pressure. Regardless, anytime that you step onto the field with your national team and you're about to head out onto the field, right? Here we go, we're lined up, here are the referees, here are the ball kids, whatever, we're about to go out. You're feeling the nerves. But you deal with the nerves. And that's the difference between players that are able to perform on that level and players that are not. So the fact that you feel like you're in the bubble and you cannot complete a 5-yard pass because you're in the bubble, well, what does that say about completing a pass against Wales, against England? You think it's going to get easier? No, it's only going to get more difficult. The nerves are going to get even more difficult to deal with. If you can't do it now, I can't wait for you to be able to do it at the World Cup. I cannot trust, and this is what managers do at the national team level, and I went through this. The first manager that I had at the national team in Venezuela did not trust me as a player. So what did I do? I sat on the bench comfortably on the bench. And while I traveled with the team and I practiced and I threw my body around and whatever else, he did not trust me because he didn't think I could do it at that level. Simple as that. This is what's happening here. How does Greg Berhalter, watching these guys out on the field, trust these players to do the job when the World Cup starts? Based on this evidence, you can't. And so then he has to look at how do we become more competitive? And I'm just going to address the point that Casey was bringing up earlier. The one reason that I would criticize Greg Berhalter is his insistence on trying to play this game of association when you don't have the players to do so. And so therefore, take away the nerves then. If you can't complete 5-yard passes because you're nervous, then put it over there on the other side, 5-4 over there, win second balls, win a foul, and then you're able to establish some sort of rhythm in the attacking half. If that's what needs to be done, then do so. But it doesn't feel like that's a step that Berhalter is willing to take, even if it means dealing with nerves.
How do you deal with this then? Over the next 2 months, if you're great, how do you instill confidence in a team that's clearly lacking it? What, you send everyone Frank's book? What do you do?
Send Frank to their house. That'll help. it's difficult because now you're depending on these guys gaining confidence with their club individually. Right. They have to be playing and playing well with their clubs. And then, because you have an elevated level of confidence, then you come to the national team feeling much better about yourself and you kind of go, okay, I'm going to add this to the national team. I'm going to bring this because I know and I trust myself that I can do the job on a weekly basis as I've been able to do it with my club. The time is limited and the time is now. And a lot of these guys are not getting that playing time that we're talking about. And so for them to be able to then somehow recreate, generate this level of confidence, it's empty. And that's the part that concerns me. It would be empty confidence for a lot of these guys because they don't have a foundation to build on.
So, Casey, is it flippant of me to say you've either got it or you haven't and you can't teach it?
Well, I mean, I think there's some aspects of that. So, I mean, what is the old adage as a pro? You play to your strengths and you work on your weaknesses. Look, I knew what my strengths were. I knew what my weaknesses were. You know, I couldn't play like Ter Stegen does today or like Neuer does. That wasn't my strengths. And it wouldn't be fair for a manager to say, Casey, I want you to play this way, because that's just not the player I was. And so I think that's, you know, to the point that Ollie was making, is that Greg has to recognize the players he has, you know, the strengths and weaknesses of those players, and set up this team accordingly to be successful. Now, in these games, sure, you can play the way you want to play knowing that the result doesn't matter. Well, when it doesn't work, confidence dwindles. So at some stage, you have to figure out the strengths and weaknesses of your starting 11 and gear that team to play the way it needs to play. Now, when you look at a team like Saudi Arabia, where everybody plays domestically, and I know Mexico did this in years past, they were able to have these extra camps that, you know, other countries don't have because their players are playing all over the world. So the U.S. is going to have to do this via what? Phone calls? Via
Zoom?
Zoom chats with players? I mean, so good luck getting that figured out, right? So you're really almost hoping that something just clicks at the right time in the right moment, because the whole buildup, you know, hasn't been what the U.S. has needed. We know it's awkward because of the scheduling, everything that comes along with it. But look, we've all played in teams that have had great preseasons and have had terrible starts to the year. We've played in teams that have had poor preseasons and have great starts to the season. So, but it's going to take something special for this team to come out of this funk without being able to have a couple games to work themselves out of it.
Let's ask Sebi then the million-dollar question. How much of this funk is to blame on Christian Pulisic's book, Seb?
Well, I don't know about the book, but I think we can talk about Pulisic here, because we keep talking about confidence, and I think a lot of confidence comes from your stars and how they're performing. And let's be honest, the two biggest names right now for this team are Christian Pulisic and Weston McKennie, and especially if you go back to that Japan game, of course, Christian Pulisic isn't there. Weston McKennie had a terrible game. And when you're looking for your star player to pull you out of a bad moment, Weston McKennie did not deliver that against Japan in that first game of this final international window. So I think you look at those two guys, and to your question earlier about what should Greg Berhalter be doing in the coming months, it's those two guys specifically. Whatever you can do to get those two guys more comfortable in the role they're going to be playing for the U.S.
How do you do that, though?
You explain it very clearly. You have Zoom meetings. These guys are, we've heard nothing
Zoom
but
meeting.
Lots of
Good luck with that, Seb.
You don't think that's the modern way that managers are getting in touch with their players, Dan? They're talking exactly what you're going to need to do in the World Cup and Zoom meetings.
What's he going to say that makes the difference?
It's not about what you're going to say. It's about having a plan, telling Pulisic what the plan is, having him be confident in it so that when he comes to you, he can perform well. Same with Weston McKennie. You need those two guys. Those two guys are the heartbeat of this team. And in the last two games when the team needed a heartbeat, those two guys didn't deliver. We'll give Pulisic a pass because he wasn't there in the first game, but I don't think we saw much in the game yesterday either, or earlier today either.
But before you have this conversation with Christian Pulisic via Zoom, right, that is going to be a game changer for the U.S. men's national team, you have to have Christian Pulisic show that he wants to be that guy, that he wants to be that leader, that he wants to carry on that responsibility. And I just, given the performances, I just don't see it. Given the way he kind of carries himself on the field, I just don't see it. The fact that he sees his team struggling and he comfortably just sits on that left-hand side and allows everything else just happen far away from him. That the attacking half has something to do with him, but not all of it through him. If he's going to be that guy that Seb is asking, then he has to be willing to be the main player. The guy who shows up and says, I'm going to show between lines and it's going to be tight because I'm good enough to get out of the space. And he doesn't show that with enough consistency.
Casey, have you been in a situation, be it positive or negative, you mentioned before preseason, where you've been with the US team where everything looked doom and gloom and then all of a sudden the light bulb came on, or the opposite, where everything looked great and then it all went disastrous, or just like, you know, I mean, wrong.
Sure, good, good, go ahead.
Yeah, well, easy for you to say, Dan. But I think the two things that you mentioned, I mean, the lead up before the 98 World Cup, we had some excellent results on the road. We were scoring goals. We were looking dangerous. We were doing things. And then we just had an internal combustion. I mean, our team just disintegrated from the inside out. And we just couldn't get it together for the World Cup. You know, 2002, we were losing games. I think they even said on the broadcast today, Stewie and John, that, you know, the last time the team, you know, lost a game before they went to the tournament, their final game, was in 2002. Now, granted, that was against Holland, which is obviously a little bit better footballing country than Saudi Arabia. But then somehow something clicked in that first game against Portugal. And then the momentum built from there. So, look, I don't read too much into friendlies, necessarily friendly results. I definitely would read more into the poor performances and the poor plan B when plan A isn't working well. Obviously, I'm disappointed that plan A didn't work as well against these two opponents, because you're playing against better opponents in the World Cup potentially. But then how do you make those adjustments so plan B then gives you an opportunity to get a result? And, you know, that's the frustrating thing. And I think the even more frustrating thing is, because of this schedule, there's not another chance. There's not two or three games before you get to that squad to say, okay, here's the team that's fit. Here's the team that's going to be going. We're still asking questions on, are these guys going to be part of it? Okay, what if Musa was fit? What if Weah was fit? Well, we don't know if they're going to be fit. Mm. How nice is it when you know you have your squad named? Okay, here's what we can do now. Yes, we wanted to play this particular way, but we can't because we're missing these three or four players through injury. So now we're going to adjust. We're still in those question marks, is who's going to be fit, who's going to be available, and how are we going to play?
Good stuff. Casey, thank you very much. Thanks. Is there a special Football America tonight reflecting on this, Seb?
Not tonight, no.
Lazy. Thank you very much. Wow. Much appreciated. Wow. Just a reminder, plenty of content reflecting on the US over the last week over on our YouTube channel. Don't forget to subscribe. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Of course, as mentioned, the US in a group alongside Iran, Wales, and the mighty England, who were in action at Wembley yesterday as they took on Germany in that 3-3 draw. A lot of points to take away from that tie. The big one, though, we will discuss now with Mark Ogden, who joins us. Mark Ogden, who, of course, just last week wrote an article defending Harry Maguire. He didn't do you many favours at Wembley, Mark.
No, listen, I feel like I've become a bit of a cheerleader for Harry Maguire. I think that's kind of a bit wrong, a bit misplaced. I've got to be honest, I think he was awful last night. He was, you know, it was a terrible challenge that gave away the penalty. He lost the ball for Germany's second goal. And he had a terrible game. And I think all the questions that have been asked about Maguire, which, you know, I asked in my piece last week whether he was able to play at his best level after not playing for Man United for a month, were answered. And I think the question now is, if in the next 2 months he barely plays for Man United, can he go to the World Cup and can he start in the World Cup? I think he'll go to the World Cup, but I don't think he can start. But then the problem is England don't have many options at the back. I think we saw John Stones got injured last night with a hamstring. I'm sure he'll be fit for the World Cup. But England's depth at centre-half isn't great. And I think Maguire goes because Southgate trusts him. He believes he's still a player that is an important player. But, you know, on current form, he doesn't justify his starting spot.
So why would you take him in the squad if you're not starting him, Mark?
Because you look at England's central defensive options and they aren't overloaded with great players, are they? I mean, you know, John Stones will start if he's fit. And then you look at Maguire, not playing very well. But then what have you got? You've got Connor Cody doing well at Everton, but is he international class? Maybe, maybe not. Hasn't played many games. You've got Tomori at AC Milan. Southgate had him in the squad at the weekend, didn't play him. You've got Mark Guay at Crystal Palace, you know, again, not proven at the top level. So the options aren't great. Eric Dyer's come back into the squad, so I think Dyer plays, but we're not talking about a squad that's full of world-class centre-halves. You haven't got a Virgil van Dijk or Ruben Dias to pick here. You've got players who aren't, you know, aren't playing very well. So I think Maguire goes because Southgate knows that when the chips are down, he can rely on him. Although saying that, he couldn't rely on him last night.
But this is surely, Mark, where Southgate has dropped the ball and you have these two matches maybe to experiment with different formations, different players, and yet someone like Tomori doesn't feature.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the big problems that Gareth Southgate has, I believe, is that he's too cautious. He doesn't experiment enough. And I think, you know, the German-Italy games were a perfect opportunity to look at Tomori, to look at other goalkeepers beyond Nick Pope, who didn't have a great couple of games because obviously Pickford was injured. Why not give Ramsdale a game? Why not look at Dean Henderson? I just wonder at times whether he's too fixed on the players that he knows have served him well in the past. Maybe he doesn't think they're up to the job. You know, Ivan Toney didn't get a kick either, so he's picking players for the squad, looks at on the training pitch, and he's not giving them a game. I think Tomori, he's had a great time at AC Milan, playing the big league, won the Serie A with AC last season, so he's obviously a top performer. And I think you've got to play him because, you know, Southgate has to have in the back of his mind this possibility that Maguire will play maybe two or three more games the next 2 months for United. So if that's the case, we saw him on Monday night, how rusty he looked, having played, you know, I think, you know, barely 10, 11 minutes in the last month for United in the Premier League. So if in the next 2 months it's a similar story, he needs to have another option. So I just don't know why he didn't play Tomori. I can't understand that. You have these games, these Nations League games, they've already been relegated. So the Germany game was kind of irrelevant in that sense. It didn't matter in terms of England being relegated or promoted or whatever. It was a dead game. So he should have experimented more. The reason he didn't was because they've had such a bad run of results recently that he couldn't afford to lose in the last game at Wembley for the World Cup. You know, confidence-wise, it would have been a massive blow to morale to lose again. So I think results have kind of tied his hands a little bit in the sense that he had to play a stronger team. But yes, I would have given Tomori at least a half to see what he can do.
You talk about his caution. Is that epitomised by the fact that he doesn't want Trent Alexander-Arnold anywhere near this side?
Maybe, but I think that I think Trent Alexander-Arnold's had a terrible season for Liverpool, hasn't he? I mean, the Napoli game was the exhibit A of his ability not to defend. I mean, he just can't defend at the moment. If this season his ability to defend has deserted him, he's great going forward, scores goals, free kicks, whatever. He is a very, very dangerous player in the opposition half. But he's becoming dangerous to Liverpool in his own half because he just switches off. Teams are targeting that side of the pitch now for Liverpool. The left side of the attacking side is constantly getting rewards by going to Alexander-Arnold. So Southgate is seeing that. He doesn't want to take the risk because he's also got Kieran Trippier, Kyle Walker and Reece James at right back. Right back is his strongest position in the team. So Alexander-Arnold is fourth place in that list. So why take him? Why risk him? The strange thing is he's picked him in the squad. He's not given him a game. So that was a strange one because why pick him in the squad in the first place? But I think on the form that he's showing right now, you can't pick Alexander-Arnold as a right-back. You could take him maybe in a 26-man squad as a possible additional midfielder if you're going to play right-back behind him. But then you're experimenting at a World Cup and Southgate is not one for experimentation. So I just don't see where he fits in.
Oh, Southgate. Take a risk. Roll the dice. You look at that starting lineup. Everything is just so blur. And we've just seen it, Mark. And we saw it in the final, didn't we? We take the lead against Italy. We don't know what to do with ourselves now. How does this happen? And then we're 2-0 down against Germany yesterday. And that's the only time we actually get going and attack teams. I'm sounding like a fan, which I am. I understand that. But it is frustrating when you just see them playing with the shackles on so much. And it's only when the chips are down they think, oh, we better go for this now.
Listen, you can talk about the World Cup semi-final in 2018 against Croatia, the same thing. England's problem is and has been for a long time their lack of creativity midfield. They haven't got a player like a Luka Modric or a Verratti, somebody that can, you know, a Pirlo back in the day, somebody who can get the ball, control the play, take the pressure off the back four, create chances for the forwards. They just, you know, Bellingham was brilliant against Germany. And I think, you know, Calvin Phillips, if he's fit, does a job. Declan Rice to the job, but none of those three are creative players. The players that can get up and down the pitch, they can, you know, they can put a screen in front of the back four, but they're not players that can control the tempo of a game, can dictate, you know, control it for 20 minutes, take the pressure off the rest of the other team by just keeping the ball. England can't do that. And while that is the case, they're never going to win a major tournament because against the Italys and the Croatians, when they get the ball and they kill you with possession, England haven't got an answer for it. And that is the crux of the problem for England. Until they find that player, they're not going to win. But they've got some very good players, and I don't think Southgate is a coach who is bold enough to find a way to win. Now, if Gareth Southgate, for whatever reason, I'm not going to go to Qatar. Now, he will do, there's no doubt about that. And they said, well, what can we do? If you gave Thomas Tuchel the job, you know, Thomas Tuchel would be... You know, what would he get out of that squad that Gareth Southgate wouldn't do? But Tuchel is an elite Champions League manager. That's the sort of quality you need to turn this England team into a World Cup winner.
I bet Tuchel still wouldn't pick Pulisic, would he?
No, he sure wouldn't.
So what's interesting, because England are in this bubble. Mm-hmm. You know, I obviously grew up there, and you kind of look at the talent around you think, wow, you know, we're good enough to go and win the whole tournament. When you look at Harry Kane is there, and great Jude Bellingham, and Sterling, and Saka, whatever. But then you look at Brazil today, who we'll talk about a little bit later on, and they are just on such a different level all around the pitch, particularly in attack. It's not even really a conversation.
And the mentality of what Brazil is, expects to be, shows up and is that team. The case for England is a curious one because there's a level of expectation that is not necessarily based on results. Now, of course, they had success in the Euros. They had some success in the World Cup. And so you're thinking, okay, we're building up to then take the next step. And logically, the next step would be, well, if we made it to the semifinals last World Cup, hey, here we go, it's coming home. And so then you have these expectations that are sky high, right? And Mark just mentioned the point that they don't quite have the creative players. What they don't have is the ability to recognize moments in a game in which they actually have a history of success and saying, we've gone up against Italy, final of the Euros, let's take a step forward. Instead, they do what people that are unsure of themselves do, and that is take a step back and get conservative because you start protecting. Usually, these players in their club teams, that's not the way they play in the Premier League. Huh? The Premier League is back and forth. It's open. It's the athleticism and it's the tempo and the pace with which you play, which usually a team like Italy, for example, would not be able to cope with. And yet, England doesn't recognize this and takes a step back and allows Italy to then play the way they want to play and Jorginho, to run the midfield. When there's a guy that if you start running by him, he can't keep up. That comes from fear. That comes from being afraid. That comes from not having been there before and knowing that you're touching it. You're almost there. You're so close. But now you have to take a step forward and take another risk. And your first instinct is to take a step back. So going back to your initial point of Brazil, do you think Brazil takes a step back? No. Brazil doesn't take a step back. A team that knows what they're doing whenever there's an opportunity to win a game, they take a step forward and they go for the second goal and they put it away and they go dance in the corner. That's what they do. England doesn't have that in their game right now.
Who's going to have a worse World Cup, Mark? Southgate or Maguire?
Well, that is a tough question. The thing with Gareth Southgate, and you're right in what you say, growing up in England, there is this kind of strange belief that England have the best team in the world and will win the World Cup. Now, Gareth Southgate, at some point, I think the World Cup will be the end of Gareth Southgate, whether he wins it or he doesn't win it. I don't think he'll win it. And I think that in years ahead, we'll look back on this period as a kind of a golden period compared to what went before. But having got to the World Cup semi-final and the final of the Euros, if he doesn't win the World Cup, and it sounds ridiculous, he'll be deemed a failure because he'll be deemed a kneeling man. Because if he gets to a final and loses again, it'll be, oh, well, you know, another final, another defeat. So he's got an impossible target to reach. Because the team has gone backwards, and I think a lot of the players have gone backwards. And Ali's right. You look at Brazil. Brazil have got utter confidence. You know, Argentina the same. They've got a pedigree and a kind of belief that they can actually win this. And England don't. And it is fear. It is fear that as soon as they come up against a team that can pass the ball, they'll get beat. So who's going to have a worse World Cup? I think Harry Maguire is going to have it very tough. But I think ultimately Gareth Southgate will have the weight of a nation on it, and it'll be a disproportionate weight to what he's actually got to deal with. So I do think that'll be the end of Gareth Southgate's time in charge of the England team. I think he's fed up with it now. He seems to be fed up with it. I think he's grown. 6 years in that job is hard, but he's delivered way more than any of his predecessors, apart from the guy who won the World Cup, you know, a lifetime ago, Sir Ralph Ramsey. So the big problem for England is that if Southgate does go, there's nobody there to replace him, because they've got this idea they want an English manager to reflect the money they put into their coaching system. Who are the English managers that could replace Gareth Southgate? Well, the best option is now at Chelsea, so he's not going to give up a Champions League job and, you know, the kudos that comes with managing a club like Chelsea. What are you looking at? Eddie Howe, Stephen Gerrard, Frank Lampard? You know, the cupboard is pretty bare.
Indeed it is. Not long to go then till the start of the World Cup. This, of course, the last internationals that we'll see ahead of the tournament that kicks off in Qatar. A tournament that may not be quite as ready as the country hoped. This is Mark's report.
So this is the Lusail Stadium. You can see behind me. This is due to open on Friday with a friendly between the champions of Egypt and the champions of Saudi Arabia. Also going to host the World Cup final. Now, it's pretty unfinished, it has to be said. There's lots of building work going on, there's cranes everywhere, the hotel behind, not ready yet. And the road down there, again, it's just a construction site. So basically, World Cup starts in, I think, 73 days, and the whole venue for the World Cup final. The stadium, as everywhere else, is absolutely ready, but it's mainly the infrastructure and the surrounding areas where the roads and the buildings and the metro line, which is running here, is still pretty unfinished. So the big concern would be, is it going to be ready to accommodate fans from getting from A to B? And that is a question. Now, the organiser confident it will be, but right now, it doesn't look like it's ready to host a game in 36 hours' time.
What a view that is of you, Mark. Hopefully your cornea survived that report. I feel like ahead of every World Cup, we have the same discussion. It's not ready, there's problems, and then it all seems to come together at the last moment. You've obviously been there, covered many World Cups. Is there a different feel to this one?
Yeah, because it's in reverse this time, because usually it's about stadiums and facilities that aren't ready, and you know, you go to the stadiums and you can still smell the paint having just finished it the day before. The stadiums in Qatar are ready and they're amazing. The Lusail Stadium is It's like Tottenham Stadium, but bigger and better. Same architect. It basically is the Tottenham Stadium, but a jumbo version of it. It's amazing. Same goes for Education City, Al Janoub, all these great stadiums. It's, but when you step outside the stadium, you look around, it's like being on a lunar landscape. There's nothing there. The only stadium that's really dressed up for a World Cup is the Khalifa Stadium, which is, I think it was built in the 70s. That's the existing stadium. It's got a shopping mall. It's got restaurants. It's got the kind of things that you expect at a stadium for fans, amenities to enjoy themselves. I was at the Al Janoub Stadium, which is, you know, it's shaped like a pearl. It's a fantastic stadium. But outside it, there's nothing. And I was speaking to the organisers saying, what are you going to do here? Oh, it'll be fine. You know, we're going to put in, like, you know, concert style stalls that can sell food, that we're going to have entertainment stands and all this sort of thing. Same at the Lusail. Now, the Lusail is going to host the World Cup final. Now, there's a the best way to describe it is that there are lots of unfinished apartments that are not going to be finished. And the people that were showing us around were saying it's a five-year project, but they're probably in year one of that project. So the World Cup final is going to be surrounded by a building site. The whole of Qatar is... there's probably more cranes in Qatar than anywhere else in the world. It is a huge building site. And my concern is that the roads are finished, the metro's finished, the stadiums are great, but there's not enough hotel rooms, there's not enough for fans to do, and there's not enough for fans to do outside the stadiums when they get there. It's barren. And that is the concern, that the lack of amenities and the lack of thought for the supporters is going to be a real problem, because they're expecting 1.3 million people visiting Qatar during the World Cup. It's just not big enough to cope.
Will you have to share a room with Gab?
Oh, no.
Well, we're still currently drawing lots to find out who has that misfortune. And I'm just feeling... I'm
Mark
looking
Duncan,
for a pair of scissors.
Thank you very much. Mark back with us for extra time with Shaka as well. You can check that out, as always, over on our YouTube channel.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Brazil are the favourites to win the World Cup, and off the back of their performances of late, you can see why. On Tuesday, they thrashed Tunisia by 5-1. Rafinha with a brace, Richarlison scoring, Neymar with a penalty, and then Pedro coming on and getting his first ever goal at international level. They're good.
Yeah, there's a lot to like from Brazil. And I think what you like the most from Brazil is that while other teams, and we continue to analyze other teams around the world that are considered to be among the favorites to win the World Cup, and we always seem to come back to the issue of them not having enough in the attack. Rarely do we say, well, they can't defend. No. When we talk about Spain, well, do they have enough in the attack? Mm-hmm. When we talk about Germany, it's the same sort of question. And we can have that conversation about Portugal and every other team seemingly going into the World Cup. With Brazil, you don't have that conversation. The conversation is different for Chiche. It's, who do I play? How do I choose what I think is the best group of players that can be in the front three? And how do I protect them with the guys from behind? How I set them up? This is about Tite making the right decisions in terms of who would be the right matchup with the front three, Neymar with a free role, and then Casemiro playing in behind, and then perhaps Paquetá being the guy that is able to do the box-to-box sort of work. But he has plenty of options. He can look to the right, he can look to the left. he is saying, you know, Vinny, you don't play today, but Neymar, you're going to play on the left, and then Paquetá, you drop underneath. Okay, Vinny, I want you to play. Richarlison go down the middle, Rafinha on the right, Neymar in behind, Rodrigo still on the bench, Firmino still on the bench, and there are still more options. And that, to me, is the scary part about Brazil. And then, besides all of that, that you have all these attacking options, defensively, this is a balanced team. This is a team that defends well. That, again, is scary for everybody else.
What's interesting as well, and what you've seen this team kind of evolve, it's not just about Neymar.
It
really has changed to a team now. If Neymar hurts his back before a semi-final, it doesn't have the same impact that it did in 2014.
Yeah. We're not crying.
No.
No, the whole country is not crying. You then say, okay, well, look, we would be better with Neymar on the field. However, we have options, and we can address these options. And remember, and let's not forget this, Copa America, when they won it in Brazil, Neymar was not part of the squad. So this is a team that has been successful without Neymar. Now, Neymar adds something different. Now, and let's just picture this. Vinicius playing at a high level, the way that he is with Real Madrid. We assume that he's going to continue that going into the World Cup. Neymar playing at a high level, as he has with PSG. Let's assume he continues to do that. Richarlison playing at a high level. Rafinha playing at a high level. Yeah. And you go down the line.
Yeah, Jesus playing at a high level.
All of these guys are playing at a high level. Then who do you focus on?
Yeah.
Because while in 2014 you would have said, well, we're going after Neymar. Now, who do you go after? Who do you focus on? Who is the... If you're defending and you're game planning against Brazil, you can't just say, well, we're going to take Neymar out of the game and then we'll just leave Vinicius 1v1. No. Those are the sort of decisions that other managers are going to have to make and teams that are playing against Brazil. Even if you have a guy from the other team, opposing team, you're in a quarterfinal and you like to push forward with that right back, are you really going to push forward with that right back when you have Vinicius running in behind you? No. So it affects everything that you do. Not only preparing for Brazil, but then what you do offensively, because you become limited since you have to figure out what Brazil is going to do. You have to respond to them first before you play your own game.
And what's interesting, people say, oh, it's only Tunisia. Well, when Argentina beat Honduras, it's only Honduras. But we've watched so much international football, and it's so terrible most of the time, that when you see these sort of performances, inevitably you're going to get excited, and you just feel that no matter who Brazil faces, they're going to come out, and they're going to have the same game plan, and you have to stop us, and we're not going to adapt to you.
That's exactly, and that's addressing some of the things that I just mentioned, the fact that you come onto the field knowing full well that they're not going to change. Brazil is not going to change. They're going to get after you. Brazil is not going to sit back. No, they're going to get after you. They're going to attack you, and they're going to force you to have to make decisions. And so it's so frustrating, I think, for a manager who's preparing to play against Brazil, knowing full well that you have to react to them, first of all. And second of all, you don't have the players to match up with them. And so you end up just sitting behind the ball, giving the ball to Brazil. And if you give the ball to Brazil, end result is you're going to lose. And so there's every signal and sign pointing to the fact that Brazil should be the favorites going into the World Cup, and their performances certainly match so.
Many Zoom calls, do you think?
God,
you can do it.
A lot of concern.
Spain qualified for the Final Four of the Nations League with a late winner away against Portugal. Morata with the close-range goal to give them the all-important 3 points. Some more on this match. Let's welcome in Shaka Hislop. Shaka, I'll tell you what was telling was the celebrations that we saw at the end of the match. It showed how much this meant to Spain.
Yeah, it did, and maybe a little bit surprising. This close to a World Cup, I thought this game would have been more about who's in better shape going into Qatar 2022. Yet, over the course of 90 minutes, I thought Portugal played better of the football, though they lacked a finisher. As much as you have Ronaldo on the park, he didn't offer an awful lot. Spain passed the ball out to the back, but they didn't do an awful lot themselves until later on in the game. And as the game went on, kind of dragged on at 0-0 with Portugal dominating, you just wondered if the upset was on. And that's how it proved once Nico Williams came on and set up Alvaro Morata. So it very much was a smash and grab that if you're Spain, despite the win and the final this close to a World Cup, I'm not sure you're overly thrilled.
I have a problem, Ali.
Okay, all right.
I'm comparing everyone to Brazil at the moment.
Okay.
and I think when you talk about favourites who are going to go on and maybe compete with Brazil and Argentina, Spain and Portugal are in the conversation.
Yeah, so the game didn't have that kind of that kind of life, that kind of sip to it. No, it wasn't dynamic. No, it wasn't. It certainly wasn't from both teams. And I'm going to address Portugal for a second before I go to Spain. Portugal, while, and I agree with Xhaka, that they seem to be the more likely to score a goal, even though Spain had all the possession, at some point, midway through the second half, Portugal decided that, you know what, we're going to forfeit all of the ball to Spain. We're going to sit behind the ball, and we're going to go for the counter. Now, that may be the approach that you want to take, and it's one that we've seen Fernando Santos take before with Portugal. Okay, so be it. That's the way you want to go about it? Fantastic. But here's the thing. Look who you are playing against. The starting center backs for Spain today were Hugo Guillamón and Pau Torres. Now, let me tell you something. Guillamón is not a center back.
Right.
He gets taken off at halftime. Sergio Busquets comes in to play into the midfield. They push Rodri back into the center back position. Let me tell you, Rodri, not a center back. And yet, Portugal, instead of taking that step forward and say, let's put this game away, no, they decided to take a step back. And it took Spain, and the substitution of Nico Williams was critical because it changed the speed with which Spain was playing in the final third. Even if he was running at people, it was a different speed. And when you have that pace, it does create some mismatches and it does create some concerns for Portugal. Portugal doesn't step to the ball in the initial cross, and it is Nico Williams, because of his speed, that can get to the back post, sets up Morata, 1-0. See you guys later, game, set, match. For Spain, they still haven't answered the question as to what is it that they do in the final third and how dynamic they can be in the final third, because they're very predictable. As for Portugal, you're still depending on Cristiano Ronaldo. And today, there were some evidences that Cristiano, not so much.
In particular, Chad, there was that time where he was put through, took too much time on the ball, got tackled, and then he's like giving it this, you know, someone needs to tell me there's, you know, man on. Well, of course there's a man on. You just passed him to get the blooming ball in the first place.
I mean, that was kind of the highlight of it. But so much of Ronaldo's play, he's just lost half a yard, I guess we'll have to call it. And it's telling in a number of things that he does, in his movements, in how quickly he gets shots off in traffic. He's just not, and of course, he said he's 7 years old, but he's not the player that he once was. And I just don't think that Portugal do a good enough job of covering that up or supporting him. And the question then becomes is, do you leave Ronaldo out? Who do you bring in? Leao came off the bench later on. It's so many questions. And then a similar question that we had around Ronaldo for the last couple of seasons. Does he become more of a liability when he's left out? Because of how, as I always use Gab's phrase, takes up all the oxygen in the room. So if you don't have a happy Ronaldo, how does that play off of the rest of the dressing room? And clearly that's a question that Fernando Santos isn't quite ready to answer yet. Erik ten Hag has done, but Santos not prepared to find out.
So Xhaka, of course, you took a lot of stick over the last week or so after you gave us your World Cup power rankings and you admitted you forgot Portugal. Maybe that was a Freudian slip. Maybe you were right, Shaq.
Yeah, maybe their play just kind of numbed my senses. That's what it is. I changed my answer, Dan. They numbed my senses to what it is to expect from them.
They did what?
Listen,
I don't know what you're talking about.
They numbed my senses.
The truth is, what do you mean by that, Jack?
You don't know what I mean by numbed my senses?
Portugal numbed your senses, so now they're not in the top 10, or they are in the top 10?
They weren't, and they're not going to be anymore.
Right, because they numbed your senses.
After what we saw today. That's right. saying that, I don't think any of the big boys in European football had a great international window. And you talk about Brazil and Argentina going into this. More and more you see them, and then you see everybody else in Europe. It looks South America bound.
South America have
The opposite of numb my senses. Thank you very much, Shaka. Just a reminder, domestic football returns this weekend right across the board. La Liga will see Barcelona take on at Mallorca. That game live on ESPN+. Plus, your commentator for that match.
This guy.
Wow.
You know it and you love it.
Ali Moreno on the call. And then on Sunday at the Bernabeu, it's Real Madrid against Osasuna. That is it. Thank you very much to everyone who's been on. Thank you very much, of course, to Ali as well. Be sure to stay tuned. Extra time is next. International break is over. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you very much, as always, for your tweets. Ali Moreno with us here in the studio. Mark Ogden joins us as well. Shaka Hislop is here. Shaka, show everyone your glasses.
Very trendy. Fashion forward.
Oh, no.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. Ali Moreno with me here in the studio. Mark Ogden joins us as well, as does Shaka Hislop. Shaka was showing us his new glasses.
Trendy.
Weekend. Come on, Shaq.
Trendy glasses.
Here they come.
Here we go.
Oh yes. Oh. Look at that. Oh. Brilliant. What was that show when I was growing up?
You're welcome, world.
The Golden Girls. Remember the old woman in the Golden Girls had like the big glasses? What's her name? Sophia.
No, that's not it at all.
It's beautiful, Shaq.
He said he referred to those glasses as fashion forward.
Fashion forward?
Yes.
Hey, there you are. Mm-hmm. Trendsetter, yes. Shaq. Uh-huh. There we go.
Rather go backwards.
Do you expense those, Shaq? Mark, with Sever United, Mark, with Sever United players continuing their good form over the international break, what? Who are these Sever United players?
Harry Maguire?
No, not him. No, Luke Shaw did all right.
Yeah, all right. He played one good ball.
What chance? Eriksen did well.
Okay.
What chance do they have of beating City?
Oof. It depends whether Erling Haaland is fit and flying for Man City, and I guess he is because he has been all season. So, it's going to be difficult. I think that, you know, Haaland makes a difference, doesn't he? I think, you know, United have done well recently at the back. You know, Lisandro Martinez looks a decent signing. Rafael Varane is playing well. But after an international break, you're never quite sure. A lot of travelling involved. I can't see anything but a City win. I think Haaland, as much as I think Martinez had a great start to the season, I think Haaland versus Martinez could be a bit of a mismatch in terms of the physique and the size of the defenders. I hope not. I hope that Martinez stands up to it, but I think City win 3-1.
Will you be going, Mark?
I'll be going. I'll be there.
Will you be in your full Harry Maguire kit?
Yeah. Don't get me on that again, dear me. What do you want me to say? Shall I go there with a captain's armband as well?
Yeah.
You see the cutting edge analysis there from Mark? He said Erling Haaland. Makes a difference.
Yep. Yes. Yeah, he does. Yep. There we go.
Thank you very much.
Question for Ali. Who'd you pick your starting front three for Brazil in the World Cup?
I'm going to go Vini Jr. Mm-hmm. Richarlison.
Yes.
Rafinha. And I'm having Neymar right behind him. Paquetá covering him. Casemiro. I can keep going if you want.
Harry Maguire will deal with all of those.
Yes.
Don't you worry about that, young man. For Shaka. Since you have Argentina as your favourites to win the World Cup, we know where this is going. If Messi wins it, will you finally agree that Messi is the greatest player of all time?
Sure, why not? Let's just go with that.
Wow, Shaq is a bit flippant with it all, isn't he?
I know.
What if Messi doesn't put in a big performance? What if he gets injured early, Shaq?
I'm going to judge him on his leadership. If they win it and he doesn't play particularly well, it's how he leads. I mean, Maradona in the 86 final. I don't think he had a great final, but he led that team to glory.
You've upset Ali.
Who provide the game-winning assist in that game?
Oh, dear.
To Jorge Burruchaga. Yes, I'll tell you who it was. It was Diego Maradona.
He didn't have his glasses then. Didn't see what was going on.
I'm just saying, as standout performances go, it wasn't one that catapulted to the top of the best ever, but a big part of the best ever is leadership. And I think Maradona showed that all tournament long.
Oh, my God. Ay, ay, ay.
Better than Pele. For Mark, what's the worst place you've had to travel to when you're covering a European competition match or international match?
The worst place I've ever had... I went to a place in Poland once called Bydgoszcz to watch Roy Keane play his first game for the Republic of Ireland after storming out of the World Cup in 2002. We got to Bydgoszcz, it was like a coal mining town in the middle of Poland, so it wasn't the greatest place. We got to Bydgoszcz to find that Roy Keane had pulled out of the squad and wasn't playing his first game since the World Cup, so we're in a grim town in Poland without the story that he went to see.
Oh, there you are, you can still make the most of it, Mark. For Shaka.
Yeah, it's a memorable place.
It sounds like really sold it.
Clearly.
Chamber of
clearly
Commerce.
You remembered it well.
For Shaka, if the same CONCACAF members created a West Indies international side as they do for the cricket, Trinidad and Tobago and Jamaican side, would they consistently qualify for the World Cup? Good question.
I guess, because it would certainly, if you combine the Caribbean teams, you immediately take out, 30 teams out of CONCACAF? So it certainly gives you a better opportunity to pool your talent. But I am not at all in favor of that. This is an idea that's been floated for as long as I can remember. And I while I support it for the cricket, I don't for the football.
Mark, which manager was the worst that you had to deal with?
I've got to be careful because some are still
the
working.
Irish manager in Poland.
Listen, people will expect to say Sir Alex Ferguson because Fergie was obviously quite an intimidating presence and his press conferences were a bit of an ordeal at times, but...
He banned you, didn't he, Mark, from the press conferences?
He did, for 3 months.
Wow.
Long time.
See, he enjoyed the Polish culture and felt that you...
he actually banned me for getting the story right, which is probably, so surprised, but that's why I got banned. But Fergie was... Fergie was great, but it... it was quite terrifying at times. On a Friday morning when he went up to Carrington for a press conference and you knew that results were going badly or he's in a bad mood, it did put a knot in your stomach. So I suppose, from that point of view, Fergie.
Who surprised... there's a clip of Roy Hodgson, isn't there, from a few years ago, where he swears at a reporter and you're quite surprised. You're like, oh, Roy Hodgson, I thought he was like a lovely, gentle old man. Is there someone that maybe we think is nice but is a bit nasty, really?
Yeah.
You can tell us, Mark. No one's watching. It's fine. Just the four of us.
Roy Hodgson was quite grumpy, shall we say. Certainly at Liverpool, he didn't have a great time at Liverpool. And Paul Ince at Blackburn when he was there, he was quite awkward at times as well. It's usually managers that have got a bit of a bad run. I never quite wanted David Moyes, as I think a lot of fans will probably realise that was quite a bumpy year at Man United. So. Yeah, it's managers that struggle at big clubs tend to be a bit tetchy, shall we say.
Mark, with your Manchester United ways, do you know why Rio Ferdinand hates Frank Leboeuf so much?
Oh, no.
I wasn't aware of that, but...
Some beef this week.
With Leboeuf?
Frank Leboeuf basically came out and said Trent Alexander is a championship defender, that second-tier of England defender. Yeah. Rio Ferdinand came out and said, oh, that's a bit hypocritical because Frank wasn't very good at defending either. He was good on the ball, great on the ball, but we'd always say when we played Chelsea that you could target Frank, that he'd give you a chance.
World Cup champion Frank Leboeuf?
World Cup champion, marble champion, and film it, star of an Oscar-winning film. Yes.
Frank the Beef.
Well, exactly. Mm. The top 250th self-awareness book, or whatever it is. Self-help, that's the word I'm looking for. so there's some beef there, Mark. So next time you speak to Rio, find out what's going on.
I'll ask the question.
There you go. Well,
I'm sure that
a little harder.
I'm sure that Frank is really losing sleep over this.
Well, I was texting him, winding him up about it, though.
Because that's what you do.
And then Frank was like, ask Raul, ask Ronaldo how I was at defending. Yes, come on, Frank. Final question. Dr. Shakran Ali, with the World Cup expansion set for 2026, what odds would you give your nation to qualify? Good question. What are they going to do in Commonwealth? So if you need 10 places, basically, if Venezuela are going to qualify.
Okay, see. Yeah. Why?
Well, just because that's the truth.
No, it's not really the truth.
Right, where did you finish in the qualification?
Maybe 10th.
Yeah, well, there you go. Sorry. That's not me being an idiot.
Well, we don't always finish 10th.
Okay.
No, we still need help.
It
would be 50-50.
How many will it be? Have they even announced?
Well, that's the part that I don't think Commonwealth actually benefits all that much, to be honest.
No.
I think we may get one extra place, and that's about it. And that's not enough.
No. Commonwealth, what do they serve up anyway?
Yeah,
CONCACAF, where it's at, isn't it, Shaq?
That's absolutely right, Dan.
Yeah.
I still don't know if we qualify, though. I mean, they're saying that CONCACAF might get 6 spots, but then no one's quite sure. Well, I'm going to say no one. I'm not quite sure how they're going to handle the 3 hosts. Do they cannibalize some of those spots? What does that mean for everybody else? I'm not quite sure what's happening. As far as Trinidad and Tobago goes, our football is not in a good place. It's about... as nicely as I can phrase
that. Who did you lose to recently, Shaq, you were telling me?
We lost to Tajikistan.
Yep. There we go.
And before last week, I did not know there was a country named Tajikistan.
Wow.
But now I know there's a Tajikistan, and we lost to them.
That's good. We've worked with friends.
Right, so Shaq just said that CONCACAF is going to get 6 places.
Yes.
You mean to tell me?
Yeah, that's, yeah.
You mean to tell me that CONMEBOL is going to get the same amount of places as CONCACAF?
Wow.
Huh? Mm. Is this what's happening?
Oh, wow. Maybe Shaka could put his glasses on to make you smile before we end.
Yes,
go on, Shaka.
When I say six, I'm kind of leaning at 5.5. Right now, it's what, 3.5?
So, okay. All right,
so Shaka doesn't know. Off, if you know what I mean? So,
this is 1986 all over again.
I don't know. Honestly, this is like
Mark's source that told us Harry Maguire was good.
don't get me going down that rabbit hole talking about CONCACAF and Trinidad football, please. Wow. I upset too many people as it is.
Shaq, show us the glasses. Come on, before you go.
Don't get me talking about CONCACAF football.
Just got to say, Shaka, thank you for being a friend. Much appreciated. ESPN FC is back tomorrow. Be sure to join us. Internationals are over.
Hey!
We'll be looking ahead to some big games domestically this weekend.
That was a good show. I don't know what you're talking about.
What show?
Golden Girls.